Rooster Tail Talk, a podcast dedicated to everything related to the sport we all love, hydroplane racing. I'm your host, David Newton, and it's time once again, so sit back, relax, and welcome to Rooster Tail Talk. It is October 11th, 2022, and this is episode 101. For today's episode, this is part two of my interview with Billy and Jane Schumacher. Part one last week, I really focused on the early days of Billy's racing career. He talked about getting into outboards, starting the unlimited classes at an early age. And we talked all the way up through the 1968 season, which was his last with Miss Bartle. Today's episode is going to join back into that conversation with Billy as he talks about the 1970 season, joining Laird Pierce's team, the Parker's O-Ring Miss, as they had a brand new hydroplane. Promise was high for 1970, but it didn't quite turn out as they hoped. We further discuss his career with Pain Pack Racing, his break from Unlimiteds as he raced tunnel boats, and his final swing at as a driver for Les Rosenberg's team from the 1974 through 76 season. Finally, we'll conclude with his decision to retire and what life was like for him after racing. Part three next week, Jane will join us as we talk about her and Billy's years as owners in the Unlimited class. So please don't forget about that. But let's get back into the conversation with Billy as he talks about that 1970 season with Larry Pierce's Parco's O-Ring Miss. I believe you sat out the 69 season. Is
yes.
that correct?
Yeah.
And then returned in 1970 with a different team, Larry Pierce's Parco's O-Ring Miss. That seems to be a drastically changed year from the successes you're having at Bartle. Your best finish was second place in Detroit and Washington, D.C. I believe that was a new boat in 70 for them.
Yes.
Was that kind of a discouraging year for you in racing? Or
yes. Yeah, the reason it was is that we didn't get the boat we ordered. We Laird and I sat down and decided we wanted a copy of the Bartle exactly. Built out of wood, using screws instead of staples. And we wanted the exact same thing that I'd been racing with Bartle. But we didn't get that boat. When we got it, we didn't realize some of the changes that were in it. We noticed right away that it was built mostly out of aluminum and wood, but mostly aluminum on the sides and bottom, which we didn't want. We wanted wood. And there were some other changes made to the boat in that it wasn't as wide in the tunnel as the Bartle. I mean, it was like 12 inches narrower. Mm-hmm. And I drove it over my head, quite frankly, in the first 2 years, trying to make that boat win. And it just wouldn't do it. It would go down the straightaway just bouncing because it didn't get enough air under it. And it was a terrible disappointment to me and to Laird Pierce and Laird's sons. It was not a good year. Yeah. And it was hard to swallow because that isn't what we wanted to do. Jack Cochran had built the engines, and he was the guy that built the engines for Herensberger and Colonel Gardner when they were going so fast. So we had a row of 12 Rose Merlins sitting there, ready to race, and a boat we thought was capable of winning, and it just wasn't. So it was a bad year, bad couple of years, really. And that led my career down a different path with Dave Herensberger, and that was an interesting experience as well, quite frankly.
Yeah. Yeah, how did that experience come about? He went from Pierce's team to Herensberger.
Well, I met with Dave a couple of times at his office at Pain Pack, and his wife mostly wanted me to drive the boat. Dave was, I wouldn't say he was a real big fan of mine, but he liked the fact that I could drive the boat quite well. And, he took that cab over boat that he had with the two Chryslers in it, mm-hmm. and Lucero converted it over to a Rolls Merlin. And when we first took it out, it was good. It was drove well and all that, but we tried to put a side skid fin on it, and at that time, that was a new concept. And I spun the boat out several times in Lake Washington, trying to make it work. And we kind of gave up on it for the rest of that time, because I couldn't get it around the turn. And then, we did set the qualifying speed record in Seattle with it, and won the last three races, I think, of that year. And so it turned out to be a pretty fast boat. And we did get the second year, I think, we got the skid fin working pretty well. Mm-hmm. And that helped it. At the same time, the one thing I liked about driving that boat was that, unlike Bardol that had the high-dome pistons, mm-hmm. I would ask this Jim Lucero how much manifold pressure I could pull with it, and he said, "Don't even worry about manifold pressure. I don't want you looking at the gauges after testing. Wow. Just put your foot down and win the boat race."
Yeah.
And I was able to do that. And I don't think I never broke an engine with Panpac, not even one.
Really?
And, wow. And I would push the engine as hard as I could to in order to win. So that was a fun experience. When you're accustomed to having to watch something so closely to make sure that you didn't pull more than 120 inches,
yeah,
and you're told don't even bother doing that, that was fun.
Yeah, that's probably a blessing. You could focus more on the race and the boat ride and what's going on around you, not worry about the gauges.
Yeah, it was. I had my first real bad experience was getting thrown out in Miami, though.
Yeah,
and that set me back pretty far back because I was about 210 pounds going into that race, and before I could race the next one, I was down to 175.
Wow.
And my eyes were still bright red from broke the blood vessels in my eyes with an impact. I think with the boat is what caused it, but by the end of the year, I was pretty confident in it, and I was able to win the last three races. And so we thought the next year it would be really a bombshell for us, and it would have been. But I didn't drive it in Madison, Indiana, because they had a real bad storm that year, mm-hmm. and the river was dark brown or really muddy brown. Mm-hmm. The current was probably three times faster than normal. You saw logs and even animals floating down the river with tires, everything you can imagine. And I just didn't want to drive in that condition, so I didn't. And Dave asked me if it was okay if he had somebody else drive the boat. And I said, "Yeah, absolutely, go ahead. I'm not going to do it." And so they did that. And at the end of the race, it was a little hard for me to put up with some of the conversations I heard. I'd never been called scared of the boat before, but that came up, and I decided, all right, I'm done.
Yeah.
And so I got into the motorhome I had at the time and drove away. And that was the last of my experience with Panpac.
Yeah.
But it was something that turned out to be good for me too, because I went tunnel boat racing.
Okay.
And a guy named Rick Keller on Ron Jones Jr. or Senior decided to tell Rick Keller that I was probably the best bet to drive his boat. And the first boat he had wasn't very good. It was a little tricky to drive, and we were at Parker, Arizona, and the thing would be real squirrely down the straightaway. Mm-hmm. And I had a co-driver because it was a long race, 6-hour race, I think it was, and we would each take turns driving it for an hour. And he drove it first and crashed it. And I, in all honesty, I was kind of glad he didn't get hurt, number one.
Yeah.
Number two, that we couldn't race it again because it was damaged. And because I didn't really want to race it, it just didn't handle properly.
Okay.
Well, Rick Keller decided the following year to build a Scotty boat, and so he did that. And I went out racing with him that year full-time, and we beat the factory drivers more than they beat me.
Wow.
And so that impressed Jack Leek, who ran that racing division, enough to ask me to drive in the race in Paris with John Sanders, who's a co-driver. Mm-hmm. And we wound up winning that race. It was 105 boats that started. We tested it in Bruges, Belgium, where OMC had a factory.
Yeah.
And we tested 6 boats there. They all came out on monorails and dropped them down. And it was the most professional-looking boat racing thing I'd ever seen.
Yeah.
And we tested there for 2 or 3 days and then went off to the race in Paris. And 105 boats started that race, and they decided John Sanders should start it because he was familiar with it. Mm-hmm. He'd raced in Paris a few times. And the fortunate part of that for me was that I got to finish the race.
Mm-hmm.
And we wound up several laps ahead of the other competitors at the end of the race. And so that was a lot of fun for me, yeah. big time experience. And I had learned how to drive a real tricky boat.
Yeah.
Tunnel boats were not easy for hydroplane guys.
Well, I was going to ask, is it hard to jump from a hydroplane to a tunnel? Two totally different types of boats.
It is, and most of the Unlimited guys found that out,
yeah.
Including Muncy, who broke some ribs flipping one over.
Yeah.
And a couple of other guys blew over backwards at the Muncy Invitational in Miami,
mm-hmm.
which was a good race for me, too. But it learning how to drive that actually taught me a lot about things, and I believe it came easier to me because of all of my outboard years of racing.
Mm-hmm.
When all the other guys that were driving, those Unlimited guys that were driving the tunnel boats, didn't have that experience. So that led me into another job driving for Les Rosenberg.
Yes. Yeah, 1974, he created his team, ran under Wisefields, Value Mart, Olympia Beer. And you had some success in those years.
Yeah, it started out as the Value Mart,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't see the boat until I had read about the fact that Les Rosenberg built a new boat, and I had never met Les.
Okay.
And I went to the race at Sand Point that year, and Les was told by a few other people that I was there, and so he came up and asked me if I would like to take his boat out for a spin, and I was thrilled to do that. And the boat didn't fit me very well. It was the driver that had been driving it had shorter legs than I did, or something, because I couldn't hardly reach the foot pedal.
Yeah,
and they moved the seat for me for the race, but it still wasn't right.
Mm-hmm.
And it was when the throttle had to go almost flat to get to wide open.
Okay.
That's hard to do in a boat like that.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't a boat that I had a lot of fun driving initially, because it just didn't fit right.
Okay.
And but when I tested it, I wound up going 3 or 4 miles an hour faster than their driver did just in my testing.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got back to the beach, Leslie said, what is it going to take to get you to race it? and so That I told him what I wanted to is for driving fees and stuff, and he was more than willing to do that. So that put me into the boat, and we got it going pretty well. I had them readjust the seat, readjust the steering wheel, readjust the foot throttle, and till it felt comfortable to me, and then I could really drive the boat after that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a light boat on the water. A little bit flighty, and when we raced in San Diego, we had it going pretty well, and I'd get about halfway, 3/4 of the way down the straightaway and going into the wind, and I could feel it lifting up higher than I wanted it. I didn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would hold the throttle back, and I'd probably get it 3/4 of the throttle, but we still qualified one of the fastest down there at that.
Wow.
And I just knew I had to be careful with it, and so they put a fence on the front of the boat, which would block the air a little bit under the tunnel,
mm-hmm.
and I was able to go a little bit faster, almost full throttle, not. And we wound up beating the Budweiser in one of those heats by quite a margin, and so we won that heat, and that started us off with a, with the high hopes of really, really doing something with that boat. Mm-hmm. And the following year, they renamed it to the Wisefield because Leslie, of course, was one of the relatives that owned the Wisefield Company. And it was in memory of Leo Wisefield. That was on the back of the Wisefield boat. And it was a fast, fast boat. We won the first race the next year in Miami and a couple of other races, I think, that year, or at least one more. But and we actually did win the Washington, D.C. race that year with yes. as the Wisefield. We won every heat we were in. But I mouthed off a little bit to Bernie Little, which I shouldn't have done.
Yeah.
It wasn't a very mature thing to do, and really a pretty stupid thing to do at that time. Anyway, we got disqualified in the final heat for cutting off somebody. And the problem was I started on the outside, and the gentleman on the inside of me wouldn't turn. He kept going straight after the corner.
Okay.
I got enough ahead of him, I thought, to where I had overlap rule. And so I went ahead and turned. And we were a long ways past the first turn. And it took me two laps to catch the Budweiser, but I did catch him. And I had learned to drive the boat with nitrous oxide around the corner, which nobody else was doing at that time. Mm-hmm. And so I was like a rocket ship going around the corners. I just passed them all that way. And when I got to Budweiser, the same thing, just drove right around him in the turn. And so anyway, they disqualified us, but we did win that race. The only redemption for me was the following year with the Olympia Beer, the same boat as Olympia Beer. We did win the President's Cup.
Yeah.
So that was especially in particular fun for me because they took it away from us the year before.
Right. Yeah. So you got your redemption in '76.
Yeah.
Won that, and unfortunately, it was one of the last President's Cups that was ran.
Yeah.
Were you able to meet the president that year? Because that used to be a tradition.
No, they didn't have that opportunity available for me. I was really hoping that would happen, but it didn't. I don't think it happened in the year before either.
Okay.
When the boat was the Wisefield's, Budweiser wound up winning that race because we were disqualified. But I don't think they got to meet the president that year either.
Okay, well, that's unfortunate. I mean, you did have success with Rosenberg's team. Unfortunately, in Detroit, you lost to Sponson on the Olympia Beer.
Yeah.
Went on the backstretch there in Detroit.
That was the second most scary thing that happened to me in my racing career.
Yeah, can you talk me through that?
We were really fast. As the Olympia Beer, we thought we were going to win the major, most of the races that year.
Mm-hmm.
And Detroit, I think, was the second race of the season. And the Sponson was rebuilt in the off season because it was breaking up. Unfortunately, though, too much weight was put into it. And so when the boat came up off that swell in front of the Whittier, which is where that boat is right there, it dove back down on the right-hand side because it was like 200 pounds heavy on that side.
Okay.
And it just blew that Sponson right off. And I was lucky to live through that because the aluminum, as you can see on that boat, was bent up. Yeah. And it actually worked as like a water ski until it got down to about 60 miles an hour, and then it dove in.
Yeah.
But I could withstand the water pressure at 60, but I wouldn't have been able to do it at 160.
No.
So I was really lucky that that happened. And in that the aluminum had bent up like that.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But what happened is it sank, and that boat was honeycomb, and so all the honeycomb filled up with water.
Okay.
And it didn't come out. It was heavy after that, very mm-hmm. heavy boat. And it would not race fast after that. And Muncie had a really fast boat and was able to go a lot quicker than we were able to with a heavy boat.
Yeah.
But we were at that race in Detroit, we were considerably faster than Tommy Deeth, who won the race. Mm-hmm. in the Miss U.S. So he got lucky and we didn't.
Yeah.
But that was, we did get it back together again. We ran a boat that Muncie drove a few years before. They let us use it as our boat to keep the point, try and keep our points up before we could get this boat back on the water.
Yeah.
After it was rebuilt, and that boat was, I could see why Bill had so much trouble driving it. It was miserable.
Yeah,
it was really a hard boat to drive, yeah. And I couldn't go that fast with it without spinning it out either, and so I just didn't. It wasn't worth it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got this boat back, we were able to win the last race of the season in San Diego,
mm-hmm.
but that was only because Bill Muncie jumped the gun.
Okay.
We were second fastest, and I was able to get the first place finish that year. And at that time in my life, I thought, you know, I've had a really great career racing hydroplanes, met a lot of fabulous people. You know, I had a good career in my outboard days, I had a good career in my limited inboard days, my tunnel boat days, and the unlimited days. And we won the last race of the year. Leslie Rosenberg decided he was going to retire from the sport.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided maybe that's a good time for me to retire as well. I'd lost too many good friends over my career in racing, and it was a very dangerous thing to do back then because you didn't have the capsule that they have today that saves lives. And I just knew that I came really close to ending my life a couple of times in racing, and I thought, you know, I might not be so lucky next time.
Yeah.
So I was young, 34 when I decided to quit racing, and I had a lot of driving left in me, I thought, but still I wasn't willing to take the chance.
Yeah.
So I did retire that same year.
Yeah. And when you did retire in 76, you were, I believe, second in career wins at that point behind Muncie.
Mm-hmm.
He had 17 victories, a couple Gold Cups, High Point Championships. In retrospect now, it's a pretty smart decision to walk away before you lose the next gamble, right?
Yeah.
You know, but that's impressive. I mean, you're 34 years old. That's yeah. hard to walk away, I'm sure, when you're that young.
Well, I'm really enjoying our conversation today, you know. And had I continued to race, I probably wouldn't be able to have this conversation with you today.
That's so, right.
You know, I'm happy with my decision. It wasn't easy. I mean, Dave Vilwalk can tell you how hard it is to quit racing. It's really, really a tough thing to do, especially if you think you're pretty good at it.
Right.
And it wasn't fun for the first several years, but I got used to it. And now, you know, in a couple of weeks, I'll be 80 years old. And there were times in my life when I never thought I'd see 30.
Yeah,
and so it's I'm happy that I made that decision.
Well, I am too. So we can have this, like you said, so we have this conversation today.
Thanks.
That's great. Well, what was life like after that for you? You retired racing. What was your next ventures in life?
This was way before the time, but I decided I would like to remodel houses, and so we bought a few houses in Seattle. I remodeled them with some help from contractors, and whether they were painting contractors or drywall contractors or plumbers or whatever. But in my first few houses, I learned how to do most of it myself. So I was able to we wound up remodeling about 14 houses, I think. And unfortunately, I don't know, Jane, what year it was that the market took a dive. It was in the first part of the 80s, I think. And
81 to 82.
About 81 or 82, yeah. We made a lot of money remodeling the houses, not like they did a few years ago,
mm-hmm.
but because of the way that the home prices went up so high. But back then we still made quite a bit of money for doing it, and it was fun for me. I enjoyed it, you know. Mm-hmm. I was my own boss. Yeah. And I loved learning how to do all of that, and so that was fun also. But when the market took a dive, we had like 6 houses on the market, and we couldn't sell them. And they were construction loans that we had, which were only 6 months long. So if you couldn't sell the house and your loan came due, you were in some deep trouble. And I wound up in some trouble. We were able to come through it okay, because we had made some money too. And on the houses that that we still had that weren't selling, we just lowered the prices until they did sell, and finally got clear of all of that. But then I started remodeling houses a few years later. It would have been more profitable. But I enjoyed it. But after that, I decided to join my father in the bakery business, and I was brought up in that business. We would work the bakery until it was time to go boat racing.
Okay.
And you know, the first few years when I drove outboards, and all, my father was my sponsor and my crew chief and my everything.
Mm-hmm.
Mentor. I mean, I would win 4 races. We'd take 4 boats, I'd win all 4 races. And he would still tell me I could have done better, because sometimes my starts weren't perfect, and sometimes I let people inside of me and I shouldn't have.
Mm-hmm.
All kinds of reasons why. Didn't matter if I won, I could have done better. And I kind of needed that more in unlimited racing, I think, because there were times when I got a little sloppy and careless, and where I could have been tougher and better.
Mm-hmm.
And wasn't. And I think in racing, I don't care excuse me, what kind of racing you're doing, or there's always a time when you can't do as well as you used to do. And I don't know if it's lack of concentration or effort or what, but I had lost a few races that I should have won, and it was due to my own fault. And if I had had somebody in my corner like my father was back in the upward days, I would have probably paid more attention to what I was doing and come out better. I mean, I'm still proud of the 17 races or whatever that I won in Unlimiteds, but it should have been way more than that, in my opinion. And the Parco held me back. We didn't win a single race the years that I drove that.
Mm-hmm.
And that held me back quite a bit too. But you know, I don't think I would have wanted to sit there and try and win 90 or 100 unlimited races anyway.
Yeah.
I'm really happy with my career in boat racing, and I had a lot of fun remodeling houses, a lot of fun in the bakery business. I've had a good life.
I hope you've enjoyed the episode. Don't worry, we still have one more part to go, as this was a 3-part interview. Next week, October 18th, at 5 a.m. Pacific Standard Coast Time, Jane and Billy Shoemaker join the podcast as we talk with both of them about their years as owners of Unlimited Hydroplanes, their experience in H1, and some of their highs and lows. In the meantime, don't forget to like and subscribe. We're on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We're also online with our website at RoosterTailTalk.com. There you can find any news, rumors, or updates for the podcast, as well as a spot to contribute. Donations and contributions from fans and listeners help drive our podcasts to bring you the experience and the episodes that you're listening to today. That's all we have for today. So until next time, I hope to see you at the races.